and friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I are tuned into the Tim and Friends Show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
This is Tim and Friends. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. What that means in a lockdown, well, for me, and a day off tomorrow. Kids, no Tim and Friends tomorrow. We have got a day off, Jesse. Woo. Cinco de Mayo, break out the tequila. But with two kids and a teacher for a wife conducting 3 Zoom classes a day in my house, starting at 8:30 a.m., I'm rethinking the tequila immediately and probably just falling asleep at 9 p.m. Damn you, pandemic! I feel like I need a dad news conference like this dude from the Dumb Dad Pod.
You sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early. After the milk spill and the marker on the wall, we just felt like we were playing catch up the rest of the day.
Right before you went to the store, you called a timeout. Was there an attitude change after that?
Yeah, it felt like we were losing our heads there for a minute, so we wanted to just calm things down and get back to the basics.
Did you ever find your keys?
No. No, no idea where they are.
You gave them a snack half hour before dinner. Was that planned?
No. Lost track of time. Wasn't thinking. And so, you know, 3 bites at dinner. That's on me.
It didn't look like you had many answers to the double teams.
Is that a question?
Double teams, that's right. You got more than one. You go man to man. And then you got to go back to zone. Keys, check for me. And snack before dinner time, check for me. So good. Congratulations. That's awesome. All right, let's do this sports thing. 90 minutes on Sportsnet ahead of the Habs and Sens. Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey. You can get the full hour, 2 hours of Tim and Friends on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and streaming at your convenience on Sportsnet. Now, also, the archive is always there. And, of course, digital producer Jesse Rubinoff and his crew kicking ass and taking names, along with I always love to hear from you at Tim and Friends on Twitter and Instagram. All right. We've got a great lineup of guests today, starting with Brampton's Josh Palmer, wide receiver selected by the Chargers in the 3rd round of last weekend's NFL draft. We'll talk to him in a flash. Lots to talk about in the world of hockey. Lots to talk about in the world of hockey. Ken Reed, Elliot Friedman, ESPN's Emily Kaplan will all join me. We'll get their takes on the Tom Wilson decision and the ridiculous fallout with the Rangers today. Oh, James Dolan. And oh yeah, there's a game between the two teams that played 2 days ago now. Tom Wilson will be back on the ice at MSG against the Rangers. Might be something worth talking about. We'll also talk some Blue Jays with Dan Shulman. The Jays pulled a Brian McKnight. They have started back at 1. That's right. Bluebirds are at 500, 14-14 after a second straight loss in Oakland last night. They are now 4th in a very tight AL East after being passed by the Yankees and the Rays last night. And what a scene at Yankee Stadium. We will get into that a little later on. But back to the Jays. George Springer sat out for a second straight night, although Charlie Montoyo had a tough time articulating exactly what's going on with Springer's quad injury / leg fatigue / I don't know.
I would use fatigue, maybe. I wouldn't use pain, because pain is, you sustain, you can't play if you're having pain. And I would use fatigue.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it pain for sure, no.
But he hasn't played. With all their other health issues, can the Jays really afford to have Springer not on the injured list? We'll see if he's back in the lineup tonight. I don't think they should rush him. I'm not saying throw him back in the lineup for the sake of throwing. Get him healthy, but just also tell us what's wrong so you don't. I'm not going to say what I was going to say. You're not lying to us. That would be a shame. Blue Jay Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, Sportsnet 1. Jays also confirming today that they'll be playing home games at Salem Field in Buffalo on June 1st. Still a chance they'll be back in Toronto this season. We'll talk about it and a bunch of other stuff. Dan Shulman next hour. Now, despite missing Kyle Lowry and OG Anunoby, among others, the Raptors gave Kawhi and the Clippers all they could handle, but came out on the losing end once again. 105-100 was the final, and I thought Fred VanVleet summed up this season really, really well, as he is wont to do.
Whatever that number is out there, we're the best, worst team of all time.
Best worst team of all time, Freddie VanVleet. Sounds like you hit the nail on the head once again. You got to respect this Raptors team for the fight that they have shown, despite the record and the kind of attributes that we have yet to see from the Clippers, who will be under a ton of pressure to perform in the playoffs after blowing a 3-1 series lead last year. And just a reminder, Kawhi Leonard can become a free agent after this season. I'm just saying. I'm not saying, Jesse. Just saying. I won't talk about Connor McDavid's free agency, just his ridiculous season. McDavid up to 93 points on the year with 5 games to go after setting up Leon Draisaitl twice in the Oilers' 4-1 win over the Canucks. McDavid's on fire. Mike Smith was pretty good again, and the Oilers seem to be peaking at just the right time and getting a chance to rest some players, perhaps, as they get set for the postseason. Don't think anyone will want to face them in the playoffs. Maybe Montreal. As mentioned, we've got the Habs and the Sens, Scotiabank, Wednesday night hockey across the country, while viewers in the Calgary region can see the Flames and Jets on Sportsnet West, 7:30 Mountain Time, 9:30 Eastern. Winnipeg, of course, trying to snap that 7-game losing streak. They're tied with Montreal for third in the division. So we may see a little shakeup in the standings after tonight. Plenty of hockey talk coming up. But all eyes will be on Madison Square Garden tonight. Caps and Rangers. And after all the fallout from yesterday's Tom Wilson decision, an unbelievable statement from the Rangers, the sudden firing of the president and GM, seems like a good spot for first things first.
First things first.
I never want to beat a dead horse or even feed a fed horse. I've heard too much about Tom Wilson, too. I've also heard remarkably different opinions on the same play that we have all seen, I don't know, like 120 times, and yet still see very differently. I also wonder how in the good name of Adam Graves we got here. Did we all get caught up in the moment, or do a lot of us get caught up in way more moments these days, considering what we're all going through? It's worth saying, not everything is black and white. 50 Shades of Grey isn't just some erotic romance novel that touched so near and dear. Shades of Grey is an expression that we all seem to have lost in 2021. Not everything has to spark outrage. Sometimes, yes, without a doubt, rain holy hell down on racism, closing playgrounds only to open them up one day later, a lack of vaccines available. I get all that. But outrage? Hockey suspensions? Full caveat for those looking for a fight. I thought Tom Wilson crossed the line. I thought he deserved a common sense suspension that would at very least avoid whatever it is we are going to end up with tonight at Madison Square Garden. I also believed this is a nuanced conversation that can have more than one right answer. And yet, as we left the air yesterday, it was all screaming and yelling about who knew what? What others didn't know. I know this because I did this. That guy's an idiot. This guy's an idiot. And I'm not just talking about Twitter. The New York Rangers, whose players and coaches I thought, in the heat of the moment, in the actual fire, articulated themselves pretty well. But the franchise, the team itself, released a statement the likes of which I have rarely seen in my time in sports. It was outrage in the age of outrage. And it was also kind of sort of ridiculous. The unsigned letter on Rangers' letterhead called for a man's job in George Parros. Now keep in mind, this is a man whose ruling I also disagreed with. But the Rangers called for his job even though he's the head of the Department of player safety. And the department comes together on decisions like this. So in actuality, they called out the entire department. But even then, I'm okay with that. That could be perceived as standing up for their guys. I don't mind that. No, what stuck out to me most was the first sentence of the statement. The New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. His horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. What's unacceptable violence in a violent game? What's a horrifying act of violence? Who wrote this? John Davidson, the president of the Rangers, a lifetime in the game of hockey. Sorry, what's that? Ty Domi played at Madison Square Garden, you say?
Robert and Domi, look out, baby. And this guy is a character. He's an entertainer. And look at him swinging at Probert. Got the left going. Probert dinged him with a right. Boo! Look out. Did he ever ding Probert with a left there? Boo! My God. That's incredible.
Yeah. But that was a generation ago, a different time before we all learned. Sorry, what's that? March 19th, 2012, MSG, start of Rangers and Devils. What? Huh? Sorry?
We're going to have action right off the start. Here we go. We got three going at one time. Bolton and Rupp, Carter and Bickle, Jansen and Brunt.
There is just no love between these two teams at all.
Boy, a crowd was going crazy at MSG for those horrifying acts of violence. Oh, that's willing combatants going toe-to-toe. Besides, we've moved on from that kind of nonsense, too. I mean, that's almost 10 years ago. The game has evolved. Stuff like that doesn't happen at the world's greatest arena. Okay, I'm being stopped again. Bruins, Rangers this February. MSG, go ahead.
Zaboral got knocked down, a penalty on Trouba. Trouba gets challenged by McAvoy. Oh, boy.
Lemieux in a fight here with Frederick. Ooh. Frederick's a tough kid, but so is Lemieux. Neither of them want to go down.
But Frederick wants round two.
Lemieux started it all with a hit from behind. Horrifying acts of violence. Something told me it wasn't Davidson or head coach David Quinn or Jeff Gorton, the GM, that said that. Something told me yesterday on this show that that came from the top. And something tells me using that kind of language is ridiculous. Then, today, reports surfaced that those two men, Gorton and Davidson, were scurrying to distance themselves from the statement made under the team's letterhead. And boom, not long after, the Rangers fired Davidson and Gorton. Don't need to tell me where that statement came from anymore. I know exactly where it came from. Look, the Rangers are missing the playoffs. You can make an argument for this move eventually, but we're not stupid. That statement was kind of silly. The hockey people knew it was kind of silly and got fired the next day for not toeing the line. Exactly the type of knee-jerk reaction that have cost the Rangers and the Knicks, what, couple of decades? All I'm saying is that the conversation should be that. A conversation, and for hockey and hockey people and the sport, it should be a continuation of the journey where we or they want the game to go. That's what's most important here. I'm not picking sides and calling stuff we've seen 100 times before horrifying acts of violence because we feel like Twitter's got our back. I grew up with John Wooden and his quotes. One of them, whatever you do in life, surround yourself with smart people who will argue with you. That respectful conversation will get us further than screaming for jobs and adding hyperbole to drive home a point that had already been made by many. But maybe that's passé. Maybe I'm getting old. Maybe that's not 2021, even though it probably should be.
First things first.
All right, Rubinoff, am I getting old here? Is that what we're doing here? I don't get what we're doing here, but then again, I don't know how many people do get James Dolan.
What is up with James Dolan? Even if you want to make the argument that it's not related to the Tom Wilson statement and the whole incident, you couldn't like literally handpick a worse time for a situation like this.
No, if you just let them and maybe the two guys that we're talking about, Davidson and Gordon, didn't want to stick around. But I'm with you. Like, you just for optics, like end of the year, let's wait, and then we'll just everyone walks away.
Exactly. Like, the season's not even over yet. Like, you choose the one day in between the Rangers and Capitals game to fire your front office, essentially. And that leads us to who has been promoted to that spot.
Yeah,
and that is Chris Drury, Elliot Friedman tweeting out just a couple hours ago that Chris Drury was the assistant or associate GM, and he's now the president and GM of New York Rangers.
Emily Kaplan also on that train, I noticed on Twitter. We'll have Emily on a little later. We'll have Friege on a little later. Sorry, tooting our own horn here. The Shane Goss despair from last night is real interesting to me on two fronts.
Yeah.
One, I felt like we didn't keep the same energy for what was a very dirty and almost as dangerous play after an empty net goal to ice the game for the Penguins. He cross-checked someone from behind. And what was ironic about the Shane Goss despair is the Department of Player Safety came down swiftly, immediately, already a two-game suspension. Should we have the same type of energy that Goss despair for Goss despair that we had for Tom Wilson?
It's a good question. I think the reason that it doesn't exist is because Tom Wilson has a history and he lives rent-free. And I don't think only Rangers fans' heads, but now it's NHL fans.
Yeah.
Like, he's that.
Yeah.
He's crossed the line so many times now that when he does something that's even borderline, Twitter and social media, it's going to erupt. Everybody is going to have a take on it now.
I get it, but a lot of those people's takes was, man, that's really dangerous. He needs to be out for a long time. Mm-hmm. That was really dangerous. I know Shane Goss despair is not the player Tom Wilson is.
Yeah.
Your point, very well taken. I will give you a bing. It's completely and utterly true.
Yeah.
But if it's about the safety of the players that we're talking about, like, that's dangerous as hell. You can break your neck.
I think that's one of the, like, that is a play that the league really has to get out of the game. And if that meant giving Goss to spare more than 2 games.
Are you going to give Peros bleep now?
Well, I just think, like, when
Hunter did it, what did he get?
When you actually think about the danger of a play like that could end horribly. Like, the 5 feet away from the boards and hitting someone, especially when they're skating at that speed towards the boards like that could, that could end the guy's career. Like, that's the type of thing that really needs to be out of the league.
Okay. And don't just do the outrage thing that I scolded people on.
I mean, it's
2 seconds ago.
But I don't have that same energy because it's not Tom Wilson. There you go.
Is that true?
No, I mean, I wasn't super fired up about Tom Wilson either, I don't think.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Yesterday, we had the entire conversation.
Yeah. I think both plays warranted a suspension, and Peros screwed up big time on the Wilson one, didn't screw up as much on the Goss despair. He is suspended, so they're trying to get that play out of the game. And funny enough, George Peros will be in attendance tonight. Larry Brooks tweeting out, on top of everything, he's heard that George Peros will be at the Garden for tonight's game. Maybe he's dressing as the Rangers.
Colton Orr apparently showing up. He hasn't played in like 5 years.
George LaRocque, I have the tweet. He said, give me 1 game contract for tonight's game and I'll take care of Tom Will.
Plenty more on this coming up. Emily Kaplan, Elliot Friedman.
Awesome,
Kenny Reed always loves to jump into the fray on things like this. He's in the second hour. Still to come, Brampton's Josh Palmer, 77th overall pick. Last weekend's NFL draft, and the wide receiver will join us after the break to chat about being a Los Angeles Charger. Emily Kaplan on what the hell's going on in New York ahead of tonight's Rangers-Caps rematch. And later I'll be joined in studio by Kenny Reed, who has a few thoughts on this Tom Wilson thing. Elliot Friedman, this is going to be fun. People have been fired. Davidson, Gorton, plus Schulman on the roller coaster ride that is the Toronto Blue Jays. It's hump day. You're on Tim and Friends. Let's get through it together, kids.
McDavid got it back. One-timer. Draisaitl, he ties the game. To Draisaitl. McDavid gives it back to a one-timer, a score. McDavid up to 93 now.
Cuts in. Backhand. That's a good challenge. These Houston Astros, as you hear the boos. Altuve should expect 3 days of this.
It's time to welcome the future champion of the world, Mason William Russell.
With the 77th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft.
Hey, Josh, this is Tom Telesco with the Chargers.
How you doing, Coach?
Good, good. I'm the GM, but I'll be the head coach one day, maybe.
I'm sorry, my fault.
I'll talk to Brandon, see if we can make that change. I'm just kidding. Hey, we're gonna pick you here with our pick in the third round.
The Los Angeles Chargers select Josh Palmer, wide receiver, Tennessee.
Thank you so much. I'm ready to get to work, man. I need that. I need whatever y'all got. I need the playbook. I need all that. I'm ready to come and work, man.
Who says Brampton takes L's? Been saying from time, never mind Six Buzz, Brampton produces some crazy athletes, and my next guest is living proof. One of a record-tying four Canadian kids selected in the NFL draft out of Brampton by way of Tennessee. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome the Chargers, Josh Palmer. Josh, welcome to Tim and Friends. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. Listen, are you getting used to hearing the Los Angeles Chargers, Josh Palmer?
Yeah, I am. I'm getting used to it. You know, lately I've been getting a lot of unknown numbers, and whenever I see the area code is California, I just pick up on the first ring.
You might have told. You're lucky this is only on in Canada. Otherwise, everyone in California would try to hit you up. Drake tried to tell me one time about draft day, but I really wasn't listening to Drake. What was draft day like for you?
It was special. It was definitely special being able to have friends and family, you know, all close friends and family come along. And, you know, I was watching the draft and I was hoping my name was going to get called. And if it didn't get called that day, I was going to be fine. But when I saw that phone ring on my lap, then that's when I was like, everybody be quiet. And then you can see in the film once football kicked in, I was like, Everybody just turned into coach, and I called the GM coach by accident, but I mean it's all cool.
Yeah, you're allowed to be excited on draft day. So like, what are the emotions? I mean, as picks go through, obviously you don't want to get too hyped up about a spot, and you kind of know from agents telling you who might be interested. Who, like, is it just trying to live in the moment and share it with friends and family?
Yeah, essentially, my agents, you know, I told them once it got close to draft day that I didn't want to know the projections. I didn't want to know what coaches or GMs were saying. I just wanted to be in the moment. You know, I didn't really care what slot I got drafted to. You know, I'm really, really thankful I was drafted by the LA Chargers for believing in me. But I was just ready to finally be on the team and finally get to work.
Understood. One of four Canadians selected in the draft. I mentioned that off the top. Now, I know you went to the States for high school, but is there still some pride in hearing that Canadians are kind of doing work and now being recognized for it?
Sorry, give me that one more time.
I said, because of the four Canadians being drafted into the NFL this year, I know you went to high school in the States, but is there still some Canadian pride to understand and know that Canucks are now doing the work and being recognized for it?
Yeah, I do. And on top of that, I definitely do feel like there's a lot more talent in the city, you know, in Brampton. You know, I played with a lot of guys at St. Rock that when I saw them play, I was like, dang, this guy's way better than me. And I would learn from them. And, you know, that's eventually I want, you know, scouts to be able to go to Canada regularly and seek out that talent instead of us trying to feel that we have to move out of the country to necessarily get to where we want to be.
Yeah, we're starting to see that in basketball a little bit, and I want to talk about your basketball background, but I got to just talk a little wide out. Like, if we had a national team, like, we'd be deep at wide out now. Are there any links to any of those other guys? Like, say, I don't know, like Chase Claypool, even though he's from the other side of the country. Have you ever had a conversation with Chase Claypool, another guy who was drafted pretty high?
I never had a conversation with him, but I do know that we were at the same Notre Dame camp long time ago when in high school. We were at the same Notre Dame camp. He was their top recruit.
I know Pops played at Windsor, and I'm around his age. I'm 45. Come after me, I'm a man. But there wasn't a lot of dudes from up here playing in the SEC at the time. And we were bigging up when you faced John Metchie at Bama. And there's two Canadian guys from the Toronto area, or at least the greater Toronto area. Did you guys share that connection, or was it just Bama, Tennessee, focus on the game? This is SEC football.
Did we share a connection?
Like did you talk? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember not knowing John.
Right.
You know, we knew each other growing up in Brampton with some other friends down there. And before that game, you know, we're just wishing each other good luck. But you know, there was always love. There wasn't like any trash talking and stuff. But you know, after the game, we went to each other just say what's up. And he was actually at the at my draft a couple days ago. So that was pretty nice.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Yeah. He might be the next one. Josh Palmer joining us here on Tim and Friends. I know you scored a game touchdown in that game. And might have been a decent DB on you when you scored that touchdown. Do you feel like you can be a big game player?
Yeah, I do. I do. How I see it is, instead of it being like a big play, it's just a play. You know, a play that should be made. It was just a big moment that play was made. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I work really hard at what I do. So when I do make those plays, I kind of see them as, you know, I work so hard to do it. That's why I'm not really surprised. Even though I am very grateful when I'm able to make those plays and help my team win games.
So whether it's Edmund Campion or Bama, it's just making a play.
Oh, I went to St. Rock. My sister went to Campion.
Right. I know. I'm saying like whether you're playing against Campion or whether or not. I know it's a Catholic school and doesn't cross over. I was just trying to think of the first Brampton school that I could that wasn't St. Rock. It seems like the Tennessee Connects help you get drafted in L.A. Does that make the spot a little bit more comfortable that you know that there are some guys that have spent time in Tennessee?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that question.
No problem at all. I know that there's some coaches that spent some time at Tennessee. Does it make it feel a little bit more comfortable for you knowing that there are some guys that have kind of gone through the same things or had seen or knew about you because of their time at Tennessee?
Maybe. I think so. I think that could play a part. I know Coach Derek Ansley is right at the Chargers right now as the DB coach, and he was there 2 years when I was at Tennessee. You know, but just being able to have so many different coaches that came in out of Tennessee that are either in the league or at other colleges, just being able to create good connections with coaches and, you know, being able for other coaches to go to them for references about the type of guy I am, the type of character that I have. But I think it's a lot of connections that you just make throughout the sport, and especially when I was at Tennessee.
Yeah, I read a story about DA co-signing you because you went to work on his DBs repeatedly in practice, and they were saying, like, you got to take this guy because he works. I know the Vols offense didn't turn out to be what you wanted it to be or what they wanted it to be, but given a quarterback like Justin Herbert, some folks feel like you could be a real sleeper. Do you feel like your game might actually be able to take a step forward at this level because of the level of the offense that you're walking into?
Yeah, for sure. You know, Justin Herbert is a great quarterback. You know, I'm locking into a great offense with Coach Lombardi. And, you know, I look forward to learning, especially from the receiving corps and the veterans, especially Keenan Allen. I told Coach already I'm going to be in his back pocket when I'm down there. So give him a heads up because I'm going to want to learn everything he has. But yeah, definitely. I'm always looking to improve. And I feel like just being in this offense, I'm going to be able to elevate my game a lot.
All right. I know there's a connection with RJ Barrett. Is it true that you played AAU ball with Rowan Jr.?
Yeah, we did. We played on the same team for a couple of years, actually. Yeah, we played on the same team. It's called Rita. We played. But, I mean, we've always known each other, you know, just playing basketball growing up. He's playing on Oakville or I'm playing on Brampton Warriors. But we played on the same team at Rita.
He's having a great year, and it didn't come easy. Did he give you any advice on the adjustment going from, you know, like the dude who has always been the dude to the pro level?
No, I haven't spoken to him lately. Yeah. I think the last time I spoke to him was before he got drafted. I was really just wishing him good luck, and I told him not to trip going up the steps.
Understood. Before we let you go, do you actually listen to Nirvana? I see the Nirvana t-shirt on. Do you listen to Nirvana?
I'm a big music junkie, so I listen to all types of music. But there are a couple songs that I like from Nirvana. You know, I have listened to a couple of their albums and stuff, but it's definitely a tie there.
Give me the go-to three on your phone right now. Like, what are the go-to three? It can be songs, it can be artists, it can give me the go-to three that I need to get me going before the show.
From Nirvana?
No, from anyone. Just if you're a music junkie, I'm listening.
Man, there's so much music on my phone. But I would say, just off the top of my head, I've definitely been listening to a lot of LA rappers, you know, right, since I've been going to the Chargers.
Right. Smart move. Yeah. Understood.
Old school guys, I'm listening to Ice Cube.
Uh-oh. Today was a good day. Well, at least the draft day was a good day.
Yep. What? Two more. Travis Scott, I was listening to recently. And 50 Cent. I'm a big fan of 50 Cent, too. But those are like kind of old school guys. But I listen to everybody.
I'm a little bit old school myself. I understand. Trust me. I really appreciate the conversation. I know Canada's cheering for you. So good luck and all the best in L.A. Go get them.
All right. Thank you.
There is Josh Palmer, Brampton Zone, third round, 77th overall to the L.A. Chargers out of St. Rock in Brampton before heading down to St. Thomas Aquinas in Florida. All right. We're going to take a break. After the break, going back to hockey from the city that never sleeps. And man, the last 24 hours have been crazy in New York City. Emily Kaplan joins us. We're talking Tom Wilson, statements, firings, hirings, Caps Rangers, part two, Electric Boogaloo. All next, Tim Friends. Welcome back to Tim and Friends. Big news of the day. The New York Rangers have parted ways with John Davidson and GM Jeff Gorton less than 24 hours after a team statement calling for the firing of George Parros, the head of the Department of Player Safety. Lots of layers to this one. Rangers legend Mark Messier appeared on the Michael Kay Show on the YES Network a short time ago and had this to say on Wilson and how the Rangers are built.
Tom Wilson would have been playing like this in the 70s in the Broad Street Bully days or in the 80s, 90s, whatever. He's a very valuable player. He's a great player. He plays the game hard. Sure, he's made mistakes and been suspended, as we all know. But, you know, I think that doesn't take away from his value to the Washington Capitals and keeping the other players and the other team held accountable. You know, it's a philosophical decision that teams make, and you know, in my opinion anyways, if you're going to win, you got to be able to win in the street and the alley, and I particularly would not have built a team that didn't have answers in this regard. I've made it very clear that I've been standing by ready to help out in any way for many years, so you know, other than that, I don't really know what else to say.
Funny, Ken Reed said that yesterday and took heat on Twitter. Mark Messier says it. I don't know what people will say to Mess. Mess in, Messy, whatever you want to call this. Here to help us sort it out. Back for a second go-around on Tim and Friends. After a solid roundtable last week is ESPN hockey reporter Emily Kaplan. Emily, welcome back to Tim and Friends.
It's my pleasure. We're going to talk about an American team this time.
Yes, we do. We don't need you to be the American in on this Canadian conversation. We just need you to be the reporter today. Like, even for New York, this is quite the 24 hours, eh?
It is. I mean, just think about the Rangers season in a nutshell. The Tony D'Angelo incident, they kick him off the team for getting in a fight. Artemi Panarin takes a personal leave after what the A Rangers say was a politically motivated hit piece in Russia. Then you have this when, of course, the team is performing well by a lot of means and the young players are making strides. But the Tom Wilson incident just kind of became a circus. That statement came out. That statement had James Dolan's name all over it. He's also the owner of the New York Knicks. I just want to remind you guys all of that. And yes, by even New York standards, this is a wild, wild day.
I heard that Davidson and Gorton were trying to distance themselves from the statement behind the scenes. Had you heard the same thing, and could that be the crux of a disagreement that leads to this less than 24 hours later?
It's quite possible. I do know, you know, I was talking to some folks in the league office today, and they weren't pleased with that statement. You know, it's so rare to see teams come out and disagree with a state with a decision or rules that the NHL makes. Gary Bettman usually has his team in line. And yes, as I've been asking around, it's been pretty adamant they weren't fired because of that statement. People have disassociated with them that statement. And it seems like they were trying to disassociate with it themselves. The truth is, this is probably a decision that James Dolan just made beforehand. He didn't think they were progressing fast enough. He wanted to make the playoffs. But it's hard to, you know, separate the two when they come in such a short cluster close to each other.
Well, and listen, I don't know if James Dolan has ever cared about optics, and we know enough about the situation with the Knicks. Charles Oakley is a friend of the show. For those who don't know, he got kicked out of MSG, escorted out by security. There have been run-ins here, and I think Ethan, one of those actors, just said that he had his season's ticket revoked for being critical of the Knicks and their management. Like, it's just, it's seemingly thing after thing after thing, and I don't know if they care about optics, but the optics of this, less than 24 hours after the statement and going into this return matchup, look terrible on James Dolan.
They do. I do know that it is a franchise that is quite image conscious. They care about what is being said about them. Right. And maybe they just figured, hey, of all this is out there anyway, and everyone's talking about us anyway, like, let's just go. I think the reasoning they would give you for why they made this decision now is they wanted Chris Drury to do exit meetings with players. They knew he was their guy. This is someone who had interest from a lot of teams and turned it down. That said, optically, as you mentioned, they're a cluster and they're all over the news here in the States, and it sounds like they're all over the news in Canada as well.
I mentioned earlier that you were on this this Chris Drury very early and that you had tweeted it out, and you ended up being right on the Chris Drury. It seems like he was a guy, and I know you just mentioned it, but that was very well thought of. Was he a guy that they might have lost if they didn't make this move?
Yes, but I do believe that behind the scenes, when he was getting interest from a lot of these other jobs, he was promised, you're going to get a prominent role in this organization. Just stick with us. Just be patient. Right. But I've just only heard the best things about Chris Drury since he's been in management. You know, there's a lot of ex-players who go into this position, and some of them just don't put in the work. And maybe they just think it could be easy. They can rest on their laurels. And all I've heard about Chris Drury is he has put in the work. He is passionate about this. He is bright. So I think the Rangers have long identified that this is their guy, and they just wanted to make him their guy.
Emily Kaplan of ESPN joining us here on Tim and Friends. Emily, what do you think happens tonight?
Great question. I did talk to someone with the Department of Player Safety earlier, and they said they will be watching this game closely, specifically monitoring things like retaliation and retribution. I think we all agree there is no place for any of that in our game, as polarizing as the last week has become. I'd like to think we all agree on that. You know, I don't know if the Rangers are going to call up Mason Gearston. He's the one tough guy they have in the AHL. If you listen to the Capitals today, they think that everything's just been blown out of proportion. They're like, look at the Penguins game last night. Things got crazy. So I don't think they're looking to, you know, defend their honor, defend Tom Wilson's honor. But we'll just have to wait and see. And I know I'll have a big bowl of popcorn.
We got video of Mason Gearston fighting last night, and he was the guy when you immediately looked down to the Hartford Wolfpack who jumped off the paper as someone who might be able to jump into the fray and do this for them. And just for the mullet, I wouldn't mind seeing him. We haven't heard yet if anyone's been called up for this game. Was part of why Gorton and Davidson walk, however you want to say it, being fired, walking away, whatever it ends up being in the press release that they just sent out. It seems like a parting of ways. But was any of that what Mark Messier was talking about, that they weren't built for any sort of retaliation in this spot, or maybe even any sort of deterrent for a guy like Tom Wilson, even though when you lose your mind, I don't know what deterrent means because Tom Wilson just lost his mind. But that's neither here nor there. Is that part of why Gorton and Davidson aren't there anymore, because they didn't have this built into their team?
It's possible, but if that's the reason, I would argue, well, they did have that on their team, and it was Brendan Lemieux. They just traded him because they were trying to make way for these young prospects that Jeff Gorton was trying to develop in order to develop. Right. So he's kind of caught, in a tricky situation there. They also do have some toughness on the team. I'd argue that Jacob Trouba is a pretty tough player. Lindgren can be tough, but both of them are out injured right now, and just the guys on the bench and the guys on the roster weren't that tough. They're mostly skilled guys.
So if the NHL is looking at this closely, was there any thought or in your conversations with the Department of Player Safety that something needed to be levied against Tom Wilson just to avoid whatever the hell ends up happening tonight?
That's a really great question. No, I don't think they thought that way. You know, the way they do their discipline is they look at the play first, and they looked at this play and they said, okay, that fall with Buchnevich, that was accidental. It kind of just happened. When he was punching Buchnevich on the ground, that's where we levied him a fine, but everything after was melee. And then after that, if they determined it's a suspendable play, then they'll look at prior history. And of course, they didn't think it was a suspendable play. And so I give you that context to say, this is the way they were looking at it by the books. They weren't thinking, oh, optics, it looks so violent, or oh, optics, people are talking about it, we need to suspend Tom Wilson. They were just doing things the way they've always done things. So no, I don't think they're going to bow to public reaction. Quite frankly, they think they know more than the public, and I think they might.
Emily Kaplan joining us here on Tim and Friends. It's interesting because one of the tenets that I believe in a show where I give my opinion all the time is that you need steady leadership, that in sports, you need to have leaders who keep things consistent and have patience when patience is needed. And you mentioned this, there's a lot of good young players on this team. They just won a draft lottery, added one they thought they would never get in Alex Lafreniere. Like, all of this season and all of this turmoil, is this good for this young team?
That's a great question. I keep going back to this quote that Chris Kreider had. It was in February, and he was saying, I was joking to Alexis Lafreniere, and this is more drama and unorthodox things that I have seen in more than a decade being in this league that just have happened in the season. And that was before, like, the other half of the shoe dropped and how crazy it is. So these guys have definitely been put through the ringer. They're definitely getting on the job experience and on the, you know, conflict experience and learning how to navigate the bright lights of Madison Square Garden. I'd like to think ultimately they will emerge a better team from this, but I just have to think of these young players who are emerging into this league and saying, how taxing is this for them? They just want to focus on their game and getting better, and like, this is just so much drama.
All right, last one. The TNT deal, the ESPN deal, freshly minted. I know that you were on Outside the Lines earlier today. I don't know. Were you on Around the Horn earlier today as well?
We'll be on tomorrow.
You'll be on tomorrow. And they might want to be talking hockey. Like, the buzz around this, is that something that the NHL wants, even though it might be a little bit negative?
It's a really great question. I was actually talking to Chris Versteeg, a guy a lot of you know in Canada. We were messaging back and forth today, and his point is, no, it's not. And I said, you know, that's a great point, because as great as it is that I've had 5 TV hits in the last 2 days, they've all been about this, which is essentially a black eye for the league. The league doesn't like this. They want to be focusing on Connor McDavid and Cole Caulfield and the Carolina Hurricanes. So, I'm of the opinion that any eyeballs are good eyeballs. And if that's going to get people to tune into the game tonight and maybe they appreciate a little more of what Artemi Panarin can do, that's great. But I know the league would prefer if we could just talk about their great players. And there are so many of them that are doing great things this season.
Yeah, it doesn't always happen that way, though. Really appreciate you doing this and joining us as per usual. Let's do it again. We'll look. Third time's a charm. Appreciate the two previous engagements here. Thanks for doing it, Emily.
Always. Thank you for having me.
There is Emily Kaplan of ESPN. And listen, we played the clips earlier in the show. I don't know if you were here at the start of the show. I don't know if you were listening. But we played Ty Domi doing the heavyweight champion. We played a line brawl to start a game between the Rangers and the Devils. We played a game from earlier this year, the Bruins at MSG. And there were scraps all over the place. And there weren't a lot of fans that were going, nah, this is boring. Like, how many people will tune into this game tonight because of what might happen versus if there was nothing the previous game? I guarantee you that number is significant. coming up next. What is sure to be an entertaining segment. Ken Reed dropping by in studio. Elliot Friedman also dropping by. We'll continue the conversation around Tom Wilson and the New York Rangers and what happens tonight. We'll also talk other hockey. I promise. It's Tim and Friends for a Wednesday.
Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Back here, hour number two, this Wednesday edition of Tim and Friends. Still to come, Dan Shulman on the Jays, who continue to kind of ride the roller coaster along with some injuries. Plus, Elliot Friedman had a Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey featuring the Canadians and the Sens across the country. Flames and Jets are on Sportsnet West regionally. The race for third in the North takes center stage as both the Habs and the Jets are in action tonight. Also in action today is Kenny Reed, who joins me in studio, trophy in hand, flow on the go. He's ready to play. How are you, Kenny, buddy?
A little fired up, bud. Oh, two cappuccinos in me, and, you know, the kind of stuff I like to talk about sometimes is on the go.
I did give you a little bit of credit. Last block, I'm not sure if you saw it.
Could you point it out again, just to people just tuning in?
But Ken Reed took some heat, saying that there was a... maybe a need for a little toughness on the New York Rangers.
Well, I tweeted out yesterday, this is, I said, toughest guy on the ice, knew no one on the Rangers could do anything.
Yeah.
Did exactly what he wanted to do. You either accept the league's decision or you muscle up.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people came at me. A lot of people who I actually respect didn't come at me and told me I was correct. And I should Barry Horowitz it right now, Tim.
Yeah, that's on your side.
Can we get a video of Barry Horowitz up just so we can show that to the younger viewers?
Yeah, like, that's easy to pull up in 2 seconds.
Eventually. Okay. Because I'm going to talk about this several times throughout the hour.
I'm going to pull up some video right now, and not often during my show will we start talking about the Orioles and the Mariners.
Yeah.
But the Orioles and the Mariners are playing right now, and John Means of the Orioles has a no-hitter into the bottom of the ninth. Now, this is the first batter of the bottom of the ninth, and we'll take you there live if we get to the point. I think Friedge would be okay with this, right?
I wouldn't want to run that by him.
The only blemish on this so far is a runner reached on a wild pitch. So he struck a guy out in the third, but because of the hook on the pitch, got away from the catcher, runner advances to first on the wild pitch.
No Kurt Hennig then. No Mr. Perfect.
No, there is no Mr. Perfect right now. So this is bottom of the ninth, nobody out. I think what we'll do is we'll take a little bit of a break from Johnny Means, looking for the first solo no-hitter in Orioles history since 1969.
Was that in the summer, that game?
I think it was in the summer that Jim Palmer had it. They also had a combined no-hitter in 1991.
That if he gets a no-hitter, that'll be the first of two no-hitters in the sporting world today.
What would be the other one?
Caps Rangers. It's going to be a total no-hitter. You know why?
Yeah.
Because nobody on the Rangers can do a thing about it.
Well,
nobody.
We haven't seen their call-ups. We have one away, by the way.
Okay.
Still no hitter intact. We haven't mushed them just yet. If it becomes a last out situation, we'll go there. Instead, we'll go to 3 of 31. Brought to you by the GM Sierra AT4, the premium off-road pickup truck built for adventure. And whenever I read that, we bring on Elliot Friedman. Friedge, what's going on, buddy?
You know, I don't know why you're bringing me on. What are these people? Like, these people are going to hate me so much right now. They want to watch me or they want to watch a no-hitter? They want to watch a no-hitter.
You today with all this Rangers stuff.
Like, it is Mariners-Orioles, right?
It's a no-hitter. Like, you're a sports fan. You like outstanding achievement.
There, we can do
this
both.
Is better.
Right, now fine. I can. Why don't we do both?
This is fantastic.
We'll do both. Friedge, if you want to watch, we can watch. I got no problem here. We can listen in. Whatever you want to do. I don't want to put you
in
a spot.
No, no, just put it on. If they get to the two outs, we'll do it. They want me and that.
Yeah.
Now we've given everybody their dream.
The best of both worlds. Any call-ups for this Rangers game? Because Ken was just talking about it. They don't have anyone to do anything.
No, I don't think so. And also, I mean, how many times do we see this situation and we think there's going to be something massive happens and nothing happens?
No.
Like, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but I don't know. Like, what's going to happen?
Nothing. I was messaging with Darren Langdon today. He would have, well, if Darren Langdon played for the Rangers, Tom Wilson wouldn't have done a thing. And I'll quote Langer, Rangers can't really do anything. They've got no one to do anything. I still don't understand teams without a deterrent in the lineup. By the way, shout out to everybody at Langer's, tipping back a few at Deer Lake, Newfoundland. But, I mean, that's the truth.
You know what I do like? Like, you actually read that like Darren Langdon would read it.
Yeah, there's two out.
What,
in
the
this.
Accent, okay. You mean?
Yes.
There's two out.
Oh.
Sam Haggerty just struck out, so now we are one out away. I think this is where we eavesdrop. Would you mind if we eavesdrop on this? What could be the first solo no-hitter Baltimore Orioles history since 1969, Jim Palmer. Haggerty, the 12th strikeout of the night or day for John Means. History in the making.
Comes down to J.P. Crawford. First pitch swinging. He's done it. John Means has no-hit the Mariners, and the Orioles mob him. The first no-hitter for the Orioles in 30 years. The first complete game no-hitter since Jim Palmer did it 52 years ago in 1969.
How about you, John Means, huh? 12 punch-outs. First time in his career, he goes past 70s. The bullpen comes blazing in, and John Means makes history.
Live on Tim and Friends, John Means makes history.
Is this where I run around the studio, imagine? Go up to a camera, and yell no hitter in the face, and we hope this goes viral in England?
Things went sideways. People questioning whether John Means was a true ace or not.
I don't know if you can react. Like, I don't think that's authentic. I don't think that's your actual reaction to John Means. No hitter. Freach, let me ask you this. We're all sports fans here. Carlos Rodon lost a perfect game when he hit a batter in the toe in the bottom of the ninth.
Big toe,
worst way to lose a perfect game, hitting a batter in the toe in the ninth inning, or striking out a guy having a pass ball / wild pitch, and that's the only runner that got aboard against John Means.
I would say the worst way is number two, because this way at least it's your fault, right? Like, you threw the pitch.
A
passed ball technically is the catcher's fault. So if it was me, I wouldn't want the catcher to take the blame. I would want to say, you idiot, you can't hit the guy. And that's, unless you're Pedro Martinez and you're doing it on purpose. I can't say, I got to say it's my fault as opposed to someone else's.
Getty?
I just want to take the blame thing and segue into speaking of blame. Who's to blame for that Rangers message? We kind of know now, don't we, Elliot?
Yeah, I got to tell you, when the news came down today, honestly, Ken, I said, like everyone else, this has to do with the statement for Tuesday night and the reaction. But the more information I collect, you know, maybe it affected the timing, but this was going to happen. There had clearly been, James Dolan, the owner of Madison Square Garden, the Knicks and the Rangers, he generally leaves the Rangers alone and he concentrates on the Knicks. And if you follow the way he's run them over the years, he's incredibly impulsive. He makes crazy changes. And this is normal for him. You know, the Knicks fans are used to this. I look at the Rangers and I say, look, this is a team that declared they were hitting rock bottom 3 years ago. I like where they're going. I think they've got a good team. I think they're going in the right direction. He apparently disagreed. And apparently he's also told people that he feels that he wasn't, the proper direction wasn't communicated with him enough. And look, I know it sounds crazy. I know it's hard to look at this and say what happened in the last 48 hours didn't have anything to do with it. But the best sources are telling me that this was going to happen regardless.
Elliot, yesterday on the show, when I read the statement from the Rangers and the horrifying act of violence, I thought, that's a little too far for hockey people to write and to demand George Parros' job. Did it sound like everyone feels like James Dolan wrote that statement?
Oh, 100%. Either he wrote it or he dictated it. That was not John Davidson or Jeff Gordon. Come on. Like, that was right from the top. And Jim Dolan's battled with the NHL before. They haven't always... Remember years ago, there was a battle over the websites. I don't think there's a lot of love lost between him and the organizations and the league. So, I don't think anybody... I mean, I think we were all surprised to see that. It was very WWE as opposed to NHL. But that was James Dolan's baby, and everybody knows it.
And Davidson and Gordon didn't want anything to do with it.
I don't think they had anything to do with that.
And
no
didn't
way.
Want anything to do with it.
And I'm sure they wanted nothing to do with it. No. But like I said, it wasn't as if he woke up today and said, they didn't support me, so they're out. I think it was coming anyway.
I think it was very educational, the statement, though. I learned that for 11 straight years during my road hockey career, I witnessed a horrifying act of violence every day. I mean, come
you
on.
You guys did that in road hockey?
Of course we did. You did it in the backyard, baseball, road hockey, whatever. But
I'm the youngest of four boys. I got that often.
I got to say, Reader, like, sometimes watching you on TV is a horrifying act of violence.
Oh, look at
it. Oh, that's good. Oh, you can't. So much for this show being a no-hitter. that was
the
really
first
good.
Blow.
Okay, here's my take. If we can maybe get a little deeper into this.
Yeah.
You got your favorite band, right?
Yes.
Some people want everyone else to love their favorite band. I don't care who likes my favorite band. I think there's so many people weighing in on this who probably haven't seen a hockey game pre-2015 that just thinks what Tom Wilson did, it was so bad. Why should a real hockey fan, and I'm drawing lines here, care about what people think about this, which is basically a little wrestling around the crease? That's not good. Punch in the back of the head is not good. Mm-hmm. But this is, I mean, we see this every game in the playoffs, and now all of a sudden, because Tom Wilson does it, it's the worst thing to ever happen in the NHL.
Here's my opinion on this, Ken. First of all, I'm with you. If I like something, I don't care who else likes it or not. Like, you know, social media.
Like
now,
our hair, right?
Exactly. We're gorgeous whether or not anyone else recognizes
Thank
it.
Thank you.
You know, people just have to weigh in on everything. That's mm-hmm. life now. What I didn't like about this is that, you know, who are some of the people we've worked with? We've worked with Nick, mm-hmm. who did that role in the NHL. We worked with PJ Stock, who did that role in the NHL. I just thought what happened with Panarin in particular, mm-hmm. it's not what that is supposed to be. It was not an individual who could defend himself, and it's an individual who got hurt. And I just don't think that's right. I wrote in my notes yesterday, Ken, that, you know, like, if you watch that game, Wilson's getting more and more aggravated. He doesn't like the penalty that's called against him earlier in the period. He doesn't like that he was taken off the ice on a face-off after an icing a couple minutes earlier. So he's doing a slow burn. And, you know, my dad always said to me, because I used to have an awful temper. Now it's, you know, only 50% as bad, but it used to be really awful. And he said, you'll get into a point in your life where if you don't control it, you will get the consequences. You'll have to live with them. And, I just think that he lost his temper there. And I don't think you want a situation where a player is getting injured like that. You know, Panarin, yes, he's coming to defense of his teammate. No, he's not trying to fight Wilson. And I just think Wilson should have realized this person can't handle me and he's not trying to fight me. And I think he should have let it go.
I agree. It went too far. But sometimes when you're the toughest guy and you know... You're the toughest kid in the school.
He wasn't thinking like that, man.
No, but I'm just saying.
He lost his ish.
Overall, and if you're the toughest guy in the schoolyard, and you know the principal's only going
to
give you a 2-minute timeout.
He wasn't thinking like that. He lost his mind.
He lost his mind, but still, he knows even if he loses it, there's not going to be that much consequence for it. So, I mean, to me, this is... It's a game where people are going to get angry, and people get angry, and sometimes the biggest guy does what he does. I'm not condoning it. It happens.
No, I'm just saying that he lost his mind, and I don't think he was thinking about deterrent. I don't think he was thinking about who they had. I just think he was losing his mind and was throwing whoever he wanted. Like, guys like that, I don't think they're worried about deterrence when they lose their mind. Friedge, the one thing that bugged me, and I know we got to move quickly here, but... When Shane Goss despair happens last night, mm-hmm. I think to myself, like, where is the same outrage on a play that is just as dirty and just as dangerous. And when we get the suspension right away, like, it seems to me like Kenny might be right on this. The people just either hate Tom Wilson and want to see him punished, or they don't know enough about the game to understand that this is just as dangerous as throwing a guy to the ice.
I think it's probably more from column A. Yeah. You know, it's Tom Wilson. He evokes passions. You know, like, to be honest, like, I've had people say to me, I don't get angry enough when Tom Wilson does things. And, right. you know, I maybe that's true. I don't know. I don't really think about it too much. But there's no question. If you heard Lars Eller today, I thought, you know, some of the stuff he said was really interesting. It's very clear if you've ever watched those guys around Wilson, like the Capitals players, they love him. Like, they, and they're defending their teammate, and I got no problem with that. But I think it's purely because, look, that Gostis Bear play was dirty and he deserved the suspension. It didn't make as much noise because it's not Tom Wilson. It's that simple.
Freach, always appreciate the time. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Have yourselves a great night.
You too. There is Elliot Friedman talking hockey and watching no-hitters.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah. I think, the guys on the Caps love Tom Wilson because he makes them a better team. I get a kick out of people calling Tom Wilson a goon. He's had 3 fighting majors this year. He's not a goon. He's a 225-pound dude who can play the game.
Wow, he had 26 fights in his first 2 years.
He's not a goon. He made his room in his first couple years.
He's not a goon.
He's not a goon.
He can fight.
He can play, too.
Yeah, he can. So, and the other thing about Tom Wilson is he's a very likable guy. I know a lot of people who know him, and he's a good guy. What we do in this oftentimes that is ridiculous is somehow matriculate that the jerk on the ice is not a jerk off the ice, right. Or that the guy who's really nice in his field of play is somehow really nice off the field. And none of those are combined in any way, shape, or form.
I'm with my buddy Darren Langdon. He says, how much skill do you need, right? So do you think the Oilers love having Zach Kassian on their team? Absolutely. The knock on the Leafs and the Habs was, oh, man, the Habs are all small forwards. They go out and get Josh Anderson. The knock on the Leafs was they're too soft. They can't win the playoffs. They go out and get Wayne Simmons.
Right.
The Rangers, they don't have anybody like that. And you know what? I guarantee you Tom Wilson isn't that doing that to the Islanders with Matt Martin. You know?
I guarantee you you're right. And I guarantee you the way the game has gone for the past 4 years has suggested that very thing.
The pendulum swinging back, maybe a little bit.
Swinging back, yeah. That's right.
Can we get the Barry Horowitz clip, though, at some point so I can brag myself up again?
I'm trying to relieve the producers from having to go get a Barry Horowitz clip, man. But if they find one, we can play it because I'm a big fan of Barry Horowitz all the time.
He did the job, didn't he? Looking at the lights, baby.
More Hockey Talk Plus highlights and some reaction. John Means no-hitter happened live on Tim and... What don't you get on Tim and Friends? Kenny?
Intelligent guest co-host.
History made earlier today in Seattle. Orioles, Mariners, John Means, great start to the season. 3-0 with a 170 ERA, and he was humming early. He had 3 strikeouts through the bottom of the second. Now here he gets Sam Haggerty, but the ball got by Pedro Severino and it allowed Haggerty to reach base. He was immediately thrown out trying to steal second. So basically perfect, but not really perfect. Bottom of the sixth, J.P. Crawford, shallow fly ball. Cedric Mullins, nice sliding catch. So the no-hit bid intact. Bottom of the eighth, pitching into the eighth for the first time in his career. Couple more strikeouts. He had 11 through 8, 3 outs away from the 10th no-hitter in Orioles history. Bottom nine, Means. Moore pops out to Rio Ruiz. That is your first out.
There.
Next batter, Haggerty again. Could he spoil? Not 12th K of the game. One more out to complete the first solo no-hitter since 1969 for the Orioles.
So it comes down to J.P. Crawford. First pitch swinging, line drive, he's done it. John Means has no-hit the Mariners, and the Orioles mob him. The first no-hitter for the Orioles in 30 years,
the first complete game no-hitter since Jim Palmer did it 52 years ago in 1969.
So it is a no-hit, no-walk, no-error, no-hitter, but also no-perfect game because of the wild pitch. Here's John Means after.
I can't put it into words right now. It's unbelievable. I don't even know what to say, to be honest with you. Felt okay all game. I didn't really have the change up till the end. And I'm glad I got it.
Pitched into the eighth inning for the first time in his career.
I was going to say, how many teams would have pulled him these days?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
that was great. I love seeing that stuff. No-hitters are always fun. Always fun to watch. Do you ever had a game with a no-hitter?
No, I've never been to one, no.
Fenway Park, Clay Buchholz, no-hitter.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was lucky enough to be there. That was a wild time.
The cool thing about no-hitters is even when you're on the road, people appreciate what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And there's the round of applause. And if you're ever there for a perfect game or El Perfecto, you end up with anyone in the stands is cheering even against their home team for the perfect game.
The Denny Martinez perfect game, it's still embedded in my mind. That final at bat, Chris Gwynn drilled one to center field, and I didn't swear a lot as a kid. I swore.
Off the bat?
Yeah, off the bat. And Marquise Grissom, a nice little stride, made the grab, and my brother and I just started hugging. And yeah, these are moments that and I always love. There's always a story behind the no-hitter. So Mr. Means has a story. And it'll get out there, but that's great to see.
Well, I've had him in my pool before. He's shown flashes, but he'll come out after five. He'll come out
right.
after four. Like, he just never goes deep into games.
Right. So there's something he had to fight against or overcome to get to this point. This is huge. I love that. There's always a story in there.
He plays for the Oilers.
Orioles. Well, if he played for the Oilers, that'd be even more impressive.
Yeah, that'd be a great story.
Yeah.
Wonderful story. But playing for the Orioles is overcoming something in of itself.
First of two no-hitters today.
He's still locked on that Rangers.
Caps-Rangers. Nothing's going
to
happen.
Let me just say something. Before you get to the Caps and Rangers and we walk down this road again, Dave Van Horn's call.
Oh, El Presidente.
Of Denny Martinez.
Beautiful.
It was like one of the best and most perfect calls.
Yep.
The ones that you wonder if he wrote in advance. There's no way you could think of a guy getting to a perfect game and having it ready. It's for those who don't remember it or kids out there, El Presidente was his nickname. El Presidente, El Perfecto was the perfect call.
With Ron Hassey behind the plate. And I believe that was one of two perfect games Ron Hassey caught in his career. That's kind of wild, eh?
Yeah. Two perfect games?
Yeah.
I know
he had at least two no-hitters, but somebody Google that. Ron Hassey caught two perfect games, I do believe. I know he caught at least two no-hitters.
We did have someone Google Barry Horowitz, president of Common Sense, which we all know isn't very common.
There he is.
Provided us with the gif of Barry Horowitz, who, when introduced in the ring in the WWF at that time, would pat himself on the back.
I'll pat myself on the back again because Ron Hassey did catch two no-hitters. I'm having myself a day. This is huge. This is huge. Well, just to remind everybody, why am I Barry Horowitz today, Tim, if you could just dig that up again?
Because Ken suggested that the way to deter Tom Wilson from doing what he did was to have a heavyweight of your own on the team, and Mark Messier said the exact same thing. And we got a tweet from Gail. And Gail wrote in and said, "You guys are the problem. I mistakenly watched this show for 10 minutes, Three Cavemen, bye." And with all due respect to Gail, and I do mean this, and I honestly want to have this conversation, the evolution of the way the game of hockey has been played has taken over a century of cavemen and very smart men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to discount the ideas of Parrish, who went to Princeton, we've had many of the code keepers be Ivy-educated men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to assume that you immediately know more about how to keep the players safe than those who have played the game a century, to me, is an arrogance that I don't think you've ever sat down and tried to peel the layer of the onion.
That is exactly what gets in my grill and ticks me off is people call me a caveman and all that, and I consider it a compliment. Thanks, Gail. My opinions are based on what I've seen growing up, and a lot now are based on from guys I talk to who have played the game or are playing the game. And I find in hockey, so many people who never smelled the inside of a room or never even played at any level want to tell people who've actually been there, done that, how it's done. And it reminds me of the great clip in Good Will Hunting where Robin Williams' character tells Matt Damon, you know, you may tell me about the Sistine Chapel, but have you ever looked up and you know what it smells like? Right. That, to me, is what it's all about.
And I don't even mind, like, sometimes you need to be saved from yourself.
Sure.
I understand that. I don't even mind if you say, oh, that you've never played the game is so, it's so arrogant. It's so, like, I'm not saying that I played the game. I'm just saying a lot of people have put their time, effort, money, life, thought, life into how to properly protect the players. And we've gone this full circle, and we're nearly back to, well, the game's very dangerous and very physical either way, mm-hmm. and maybe having someone as a deterrent might actually work.
Can I quickly say something to Gail into the camera?
10 seconds.
See you later!
You don't even have to get mad. You can just help them find the way.
Oh, I just said see you later and I waved.
All right, time for Hockey Central. Maybe those there will do the same thing ahead of Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. It is a good game, and third in the North is on the line
Isn't
tonight.
Isn't that wild?
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. We will continue on Sportsnet 360. Sportsnet 590 of the Fan in 60 seconds right back at you. Danny Shulman, Kenny, and I talking Blue Jays baseball next. On Tim and Friends. Gail, I'm trying to help, Gail. That's all I'm trying to do. Help.
So it comes down to J.P. Crawford. First pitch swinging. Line drive. He's done it. John Means has no hit. The Mariners and the Orioles mob him. The first no-hitter.
Cool moment, live no-hitter on Tim and Friends about 25 minutes ago, a couple hours from now. Blue Jays back in action. They're third of four with the Athletics. The Jays have lost the first two as the bats went silent last night, mustering just three hits. Blue Jays Centro. But Jamie and Joe will get you set. 9 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet 1, while East Ontario and Pacific will join for first pitch around 9:30 Eastern after a little hockey.
Do you know how late I have to work now? I just figured that out. If the Jays don't start till 9:30?
9:30. It is a West Coast game. 9:30 is early for a West Coast game.
It's not going to be early for me.
Well, and it won't be early for our next guest joining us, a man about to call the game. In fact, he was doing his research while the commercial break was taking place, because that's the kind of man Dan Shulman is.
He never stops.
And he joins us right now on Tim and Friends. How are you, Danny?
I am great. Good to see you guys. You guys are looking great, sounding great. I was listening in the car on the way down. I was watching the John Means highlights from the fridge up on the third floor just before I came on. You guys are having fun.
Danny, I need to read a stat from Jesse Rubinoff about what John Means did
today. It has
today.
To be read as well, otherwise you can't understand.
Yeah, it is very difficult to comprehend. But not only do we see history on Tim and Friends, like, this is legit history. Is it the first time ever, Jesse?
The first imperfect perfect game in history.
All right, read that out
Which
for us
means,
because you need to explain.
Okay, I'll read the whole stat. So Cy Young threw the first perfect game of the modern era 117 years ago today, May 5th, 1904.
Crazy enough.
Fast forward to today, Orioles' John Means has just thrown the first imperfect perfect game, a no-hitter, in which the only batter to reach came via the drop third strike rule. So that's insane, and it's also insane that the modern era still considered 117 years ago.
Yeah. Dan, can I just point out what a veteran move that was by Tim to take something so complicated and pass it off to Jesse.
If you can't do, delegate, right? I mean, that's something you learn. So I've never heard the phrase imperfect perfect game. I think that was kind of just made up today, but that's as close as you can get to a perfect game as possible. I hope and just seeing the highlight right there. I mean, his catcher, like, that ball should not have gone through the wickets. You know, I mean, he practically stood up. He should have gotten down, gotten big, let it block him. So hopefully they're still buddies. But it's pretty amazing. And then, of course, the catcher throws out, Severino throws out the runner trying to steal. So he faces the minimum. But it's really cool. And it's I guess it's a special no-hitter, an imperfect perfect game, whatever you want to call it. But he's a terrific pitcher, and it was a cool performance.
You ever call a no-hitter, Dan? How many of you had the pleasure of calling?
Yes, I have called two. I called Matt Garza in 2000 and something. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. And I called Jake Arrieta for the Cubs at Dodger Stadium in 2015, I think, something like that. So I have called it two. And I was actually a young Danny Shulman was with some buddies in Cleveland when Dave Steeb threw his no-hitter. We were on a baseball trip. Yeah,
wow.
six of us piled into a van in 1990, and we saw a bunch of baseball games, and one of the games we saw was Dave Steeb's no-hitter.
So that's how folks around here used to watch the Jays, because they couldn't get tickets at what was then the new Sky Dome, was it not? And people would drive to Detroit or Cleveland to go watch the Jays because they couldn't get tickets
Absolutely, yeah, because you could not get tickets in Toronto. And road trips are fun. I encourage everybody who's just out of school and has no money to pile into a van with five of your friends and spend a week driving around, in remote towns. You know, see some major league games, see some minor league games. Honestly, it's great. It's as good a trip as like a bunch of 23-year-old guys can.
Well, if I went on a trip with a bunch of my 23-year-old buddies and saw a no-hitter in person as a fan, I wouldn't remember it. So I'm going to ask you about the two that you definitely remember as a play-by-play guy. At what point do you go, okay, I better not screw this up? Is it the seventh inning? But you're a pro, Dan. You're the best. So I don't even know if that thought goes through your mind.
It's more like, at what point do I start taking this seriously? And I'm not the you don't talk about it because you're going to jinx it, because I don't know if you guys know this, but there's no such thing as a jinx. It actually doesn't exist. So, like,
I couldn't agree more. It's one of the most ridiculous things in sports.
It is ridiculous. Yes. So I talk about it. Like, I don't go out of my way. I don't say no hitter every second phrase. But it's my job is to get people to watch the game. Why wouldn't I tell them the most important, exciting, unique, special thing about the game? So it is exciting, but you don't want to screw up the last call. You hope it's something easy where there's no confusion or doubt about what's going on. But I've never called, so both I called were for ESPN, so quote unquote neutral no hitters. I've never called a Blue Jay no hitter, obviously. So, that might be a little bit of a different situation, but they are fun. The baseball is a long season. You call, so many games, but you get into one of those situations, your adrenaline gets pumping pretty good. You get locked in during one of those games.
Dan Shulman here on Tim and Friends. As we move on to the Jays, I know that you were reading the transactions before we came on. That's always a dangerous thing to do with the Toronto Blue Jays. And apparently we've got news on Julian Merriweather that isn't all that good.
Yeah, so Julian Merriweather transferred to the 60-day injured list with the oblique strain. Now, he's already missed, kind of feels like a month or close to it, so he's kind of halfway through. But I assume why they're doing this is to open up a spot on the 40-man roster, which they need to put Reese McGuire on the 26-man roster. So Riley Adams got a flight out to Oakland, and now I guess he's on the taxi squad. I assume he's still physically in California, just in case there's an injury, but Reese McGuire is now in the active roster. And not great news about Merriweather. I mean, this guy, his stuff is so good, but he just can't stay healthy. And I don't necessarily think this is terrible news, again, because, he hasn't pitched in a month, so how much would they want to build him back up before they feel comfortable bringing him back? But it sounds like it's got to be at least another 30 days, I guess, to get him to 60 days. But hopefully we're going to see him at some point. But you just don't know, right? You just can't count on it at this point. But what a weapon he would be if he could ever stay healthy. Ugh.
So Anthony Kay goes four, I think it was, last night. Trent Thornton comes in, and, man, he was good.
Yeah.
Can one of those guys step up and grab a rotation spot? Like, who amongst the Jays in the bullpen can really step up and grab a spot? Because I don't know the Jays' rotation. It's Robbie Ray, Hyun-Jin Ryu, and then
Matz.
Yeah. And Steven Matz, I think those three, assuming they're healthy, and there are no huge surprises, those three are kind of locks. And I think at some point, and I don't know when that is, again, this is loaded with a lot of ifs, but if Nate Pearson is okay, right? If Nate Pearson is healthy and Nate Pearson has a couple more good starts at AAA, I think we'll see Nate Pearson at some point. So all going well, You're talking about one spot in the rotation that would be available. It could be Kay. I don't know if they want to stretch Thornton out. I think they really like him where he's at right now. It could be Ross Stripling, right? Like Stripling right now is a member of the rotation. And I hear all the Alek Manoah people. I can hear you right now.
But, I was thinking
like, let's let the guys start once in AAA. Like the last time he pitched in a game was in Vancouver, which at that point was low A, short season A. Back in 2019, you know, let's let the big fella get a few innings under his belt before we jump to conclusions. But I think, Kenny, what they'll do is they'll take advantage of some off days here and there. You can have a bullpen day once every five, I think, reasonably. You can't do it two or three times every five. You know, they do have an off day coming up on Monday, but then they get another stretch of games again. So I'll be interested to see if Anthony Kay gets another start Sunday in Houston. It would be his day. But, you know, sometimes he looks so good, but then you look at the line at the end of the game and it's four runs in four innings. He always seems to have that one inning that kind of jumps up and bites him because it sounds silly to say, other than those four batters who went single, single, double, homer, he did great, but that cost him four runs.
It's so funny. I feel like baseball has the least amount of patience for their prospects. Like Manoah, I heard it earlier today, too. He's starting in Trenton, which is Buffalo/, and you need him. There's a desperate need in the rotation.
I think they're beyond patient. Like, guys don't even throw anymore. Like, throw the ball for
me. No, the guy hasn't pitched below or above high A.
We can't get him to pitch too much. Come on.
No, it's not about the pitch too much. It's about the jumping from low A to the major leagues. Let him at least face some triple A hitting before he gets.
Well, traditionally, you work your way up 5-6 years, right?
Right.
He's a college pitcher, so he's a little bit older too, right? He's 23 years old. So typically, if you're a first round pick out of college in June of whatever year, you might be in the majors 2 years later, 2 or 3 years later. So a high school kid's going to start lower, probably work up a little bit more slowly. But you know what? It's his own fault. He struck out 15 in seven innings in the spring.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he brought this on himself, let's be honest. But, you know, it's funny because it's like for weeks and weeks now, #FreeManoah has been a thing. That's all over the place. Yeah. But it's not like they don't know who he is. It's not like they're not excited about him. But you got to give him a little bit of a chance to see what he can do. He's skipping a couple of levels. I'll tell you this, though, from everybody I've talked to, the stuff obviously plays, as they say, and he is not short on confidence. He is out there, and he's going to challenge people, and he's going to say, if you beat me, you beat me, and if I beat you, I beat you. And they are incredibly – the people in the organization are incredibly excited about him. But I don't think he's going to be in the major leagues in 2 weeks. You got to give him a little bit of chance – to see what he does, to see how well he does against AAA hitters, what the secondary pitches look like. He's a big, strong kid. He's stretched out. That's not an issue. But you got to give him a few starts and see what the results are like.
Dan Shulman joining Ken Reed and I, Timothy McAuliffe. So is it good news that we rifle through the transactions? We bring up the tweet here, and we don't see George Springer going to the IL. Is that good news surrounding the mystery that is Springer?
It's still a mystery wrapped in a riddle or whatever it is, an enigma. I don't know. Like, I'd love to tell you I know something you don't, but I don't know anything you don't. And I don't know if he's in the lineup. I haven't seen a lineup yet. If I was concerned when he wasn't in the lineup last night, and if he's not in the lineup again tonight, you get a little bit more concerned. I mean, and if he can't go tonight, that's three and a half, because they took him out Sunday, right? That's really 3.5 games where he can't DH. And if he can't do that for several days, you got to start thinking about putting him back on the injured list. They don't have a bench right now.
So they got two guys on the bench?
They got two guys on a bench, which is the backup catcher, whoever's not playing, and whichever utility infielder isn't playing. So no matter what they have, they just don't have a lot. And I don't know who's calling the shots. I don't know if it's a group effort. I don't know if them going to Houston on the weekend has anything to do with this. So, you know, I know I've gone on here for a long time telling you what I don't know, but I just don't know. You know, the team is telling us what the team is telling us, and we're relaying the information. You know, I've never had a quad pull. I don't know what it feels like and how serious it is. But I think at some point, really, really soon, either he's got to be able to DH on fairly close to a regular basis, or you got to put him back on the injured list. And you just can't go this shorthanded. Like, they could find a use for Rowdy Tellez on this team right now if George Springer is not available to play. And I got to believe by the end of the game tomorrow, day game tomorrow, I got to believe in the next 24 hours, they're going to pivot one way or another.
Kenny won't let me talk about my high school injury, so I'll just say thank you for joining us, Dan Shulman. Appreciate it.
Are you still feeling fatigue?
I have a lot of leg fatigue. I'm going to be honest with you, Dan Shulman. After 40, plenty of leg fatigue. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, guys. See ya.
There is Dan Shulman getting ready to call the Athletics and the Jays, third of a four-game series.
I'm so sick of learning about new body parts, courtesy of the Blue Jays. Every night there's an injury, and I honestly say to Ivanka, okay, where's the oblique? And she'll tell me, and, you know, honestly.
You mean, where's the oblique?
I'm dead serious. I know the quad's on the back of the leg. My dad's a doctor, probably not a very good one.
It's not on the back of the leg. I told you this the last time you were here.
I'll be honest.
Quad is on the front of the leg. You're not listening. Stop listening.
That's my problem.
Front leg.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh. What's the back?
That's the hamstring.
I thought the hamstring was
the
inside.
Now, my injuries in high school taught me these things. Yeah. And you know what else my injuries in high school proved? Mm. I did something nerd.
So, but seriously, as I'll admit, I'm a Jays fan. You know, as an objective broadcaster, I always should admit that. They're my favorite team. As a Jays fan, honestly, John Means throws the no-hitter. They show everybody running in for the bullpen. My first thought was, oh, slow down. You're going to get hurt.
Right.
You haven't been stretched out.
Right. By the way, Jays going to Buffalo June 1st.
June 1st, yeah.
So Salem Field will be their new home on June 1st. It gets a little, the heat gets a little oppressive in Florida.
A little,
why,
yeah.
Yeah, that's why they're moving on to Buffalo when they come to Toronto. I mean, who knows? The part of me holding out hope, Kenny,
yeah,
this team's good.
Yeah.
A little bit of a run.
Mm-hmm.
End up October. We're vaccinated enough.
You see some October baseball in Toronto?
Maybe. Is that what we can hope for as the light at the end of the tunnel?
Oh, hope is a good thing. That's what Shawshank told me. And it's about the only thing going on these days. So keep hoping, people. Keep hoping.
All right, Kenny's going to stick around one more block because he knows that we have soccer highlights coming up next. And he is jacked about this Champions League edition of Tim and Friends. Next. Sparta. They got some footy. Champs League semi-final. Chelsea, Real Madrid tied at one on aggregate. London side ahead on away goals, which Kenny's big on, away goals.
That's hilarious.
Real, 26th minute. Karim Benzema had an opportunity. Check out the save by Mendy. Edouard Mendy with a great save.
You get credit more for away saves?
Nope. They're about the same. Well, I guess if it was an away goal. Either way, Kai Havertz, Chip, Timo Werner is there on the doorstep. That's an easy goal. He's onside. Chelsea lead 2-1 on aggregate. 35th minute. Modric, Benzema again. Mendy tips it over the bar. He had four saves at home in the first half. 85th minute, Christian Pulisic. Patience is a virtue. Centers for Mason Mount. Tuck it home. Chelsea, third ever Champs League final. They paid for it, but they paid good money for it. They move on and face Man City after winning 3-1 on aggregate. So they want you to push when you're on the road so the away goals count. It's actually not a bad idea.
Logically, it makes no sense. Mathematically, it makes zero sense whatsoever.
Do you know the CFL used to do that?
And then they did math, and they said, mathematically, this makes no
sense.
Home
and homes.
This makes zero sense whatsoever.
In the playoffs, they would do home and homes in the CFL.
What, in 1908?
No, but this is not... No, not that long ago. Honestly, not that long
ago. Really?
Yeah, like 70s?
Oh.
Maybe even into the 80s?
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to climb back into this.
I'm glad that they've moved on from away goals.
Yeah, you're not going to flip them on this one.
No, but
there's no
flipping. The idea is that you get a home game guaranteed because the fans in soccer mean so much.
No, money means so much.
Oh, get out of here. Last call, Jesse Rubinoff here on Tim and Friends, which... kind of sort of hanging on with Ken Reed in this point.
Tim and contractually obligated colleagues.
So I love football. I love every sport. I don't think there's a sport out there that I don't like. I'll figure one out. Dressage. Maybe dressage. I'm not a big fan.
Dressage?
Yeah, dressage.
See, you don't even know how to say it.
Why would I? It's dancing horses. Rubinoff, go ahead.
For Ken's sake, we'll step away from soccer and we'll go to baseball. The Yankees and Astros continued their series tonight in the Bronx. Last night was Houston's first game at Yankee Stadium since their sign-stealing scandal, and the Yankees fans didn't hold back at all.
You hear the booze. And this is their first chance to tell the Astros what they think about what happened in 2017. Well, Altuve should expect 3 days of this. Not quite making out what they're saying. Did you hear the last chant?
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah?
I cannot repeat it.
Really? Okay.
Kenny, how much longer is this going to go on for with the fans giving it to the Astros?
Well, it'll continue tonight, but my favorite thing about it, and if you're not a Yankees fan, chances are you don't like Yankees fans because they're loud, they're obnoxious, they're cocky. It was awesome to see loud, obnoxious, cocky people just in stands. Just sports fans being sports. That was fantastic.
It was like the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
And this is going to add, like, this will last for, I don't think Altuve will turn the corner in his career.
I'm with you. That he's going to wear this for as long as he's in the
base. I think that if I were Jose Altuve, I'd be doing every good deed in the book to try and get people to turn. Otherwise, he's going to hear it for the rest of his career.
Yeah. It's just going to get worse as stadiums get more full.
All you got to do is be a good human being, and maybe people will turn. There you go.
I'm going to write that down.
Be a good human.
Good human.
Yeah. We got basketball on the network tonight. The Red Hot New York Knicks visit the Nuggets on Sportsnet 360 at 9 p.m. Eastern. The Knicks are 12-1 in their last 13 games, while New York's other team, the Nets, have gone 7-6 in their last 13. Tim, what are the chances the Knicks advance further than the Nets?
This is
in the playoffs.
This is so good. This is so good because I need to do this as one of my monologues, but one of the great stats out there is there's only a couple of teams in NBA history who have been top three offensively, top three defensively. All of them have won championships.
Okay.
The New York Knicks last month were the only team in the NBA to be top three offensively and top three defensively. They haven't done it over the entire season, which is a little bit different, but the New York Knicks are playing as well as anyone on planet Earth.
And Dolan's focused on the Rangers now.
Yeah, so he might not get in the way. The Knicks are real. I just truly believe you have to lose before you win. So they might not make that run this year, but make no mistake, the New York Knickerbockers are on the rise. And that hasn't been said since Van Gundy and his lid were walking around Madison Square Garden.
Feels like Dolan saw everything was fine with the Knicks and said, let's cause some chaos with the Rangers. Yeah.
Let me screw something else up.
We saw the outrage that the proposal of the European Super League, we go back to soccer here, sparked among soccer fans, culminating with Sunday's protest at Old Trafford. There was also a golf tour being proposed to rival the PGA Tour. The Premier Golf League has reportedly been offering top golfers up to $30 million a year to join. But today, Rory McIlroy said he ain't interested.
You go back to what happened last week in Europe with the European Super League in football. You know, people can see it for what it is, which is a money grab, which is fine if that's what you're playing golf for, is to make as much money as possible. Totally fine. Then, you know, go and do that if that's what makes you happy. But I think the top players in the game, you know, I'm just speaking on my own personal beliefs. Like, I'm playing this game to try to cement my place in history and my legacy and to win major championships and to win the biggest tournaments in the world.
Feels like Rory always hits the nail right on the head.
Yeah, smooth.
We saw the soccer protests, obviously. What would it look like if golf fans were to protest this new league?
Well, first off, I can relate with Rory because for us golf purists, it is really all about the hardware.
With the seriousness delivered.
I've won trophies.
No, I understand, yeah.
I mean, if I'm a golfer and I'm younger, I'm probably going to go for the cash, but I'm grew up loving the game, so maybe I'll be sucked in by the tradition and the, what are those flowers at the Masters?
Azaleas.
Azaleas.
If you weren't able to play at Augusta as a kid, like, wouldn't you want to play at Augusta? Like,
that's just it. Yeah. They get you with the tradition and all that stuff, but money's good. That's why the WHA and the ABA were so cool, right? Because guys could go and get way bigger cash. Yeah. They'd play for the Avco Cup, not the Stanley Cup. But what would a golf protest look like? Quiet. It would look like a suburb of, I don't know, Hartford.
I want to get the world under 18s in. Jesse, do we have one on?
Yeah, so taking on Sweden in the semifinals is Canada at the U18s.
15-year-old Connor Bedard opened the scoring with his fourth goal. He's now added a second. I mean, how impressive is what Bedard's doing? He's 15 years old.
I don't know what's more impressive, him or Shane Wright. Like, it's crazy that a 16-year-old is the captain of Canada at the under-18s.
That's elite. Some 15, 16-year-olds are elite. I won this trophy when I was 15 years old.
You didn't score six goals like Wright, and Bedard now second on the team with five goals.
But I did score one under par.
That wasn't one under par.
More goals than guys you
played
against.
Was it one under par?
No.
No.
Probably like 85 or something.
You could have been anywhere in the world, but you chose to be here with us. We appreciate it. We're off tomorrow, Jay's Afternoon. See you on Friday.